Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Everybody to Wrestling Omakase. It is episode number 129. I don't know why I forgot that for a second. Welcome back. And this week we're going to be talking two very different shows, the WWE Royal Rumble and DDT Sweet Dreams. Luckily, there's nothing on the show that I need to yell and scream about because this is late night recording to peek behind the curtain. Because I'm going to be on a little bit of a mini vacation this coming week. So this is the only time I can record it directly after the Royal Rumble. So I have to keep things down here in the living room of my apartment. But yeah, so we're going to talk about those two shows. And I am pleased to be joined by a returning guest and a Voices of Wrestling contributor, Mr. Jack Beckman. Hello, Jack.
Hello, John. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Now, I got a big question for you. I got to ask right off the jump. Do you know that women exist?
I do. When I saw that tweet, it was shocking to me. It was a realization I hadn't really come to.
Do you have any on your match of the year list, or are you canceled?
My match of the year was the Kenny mixed tag from Ultimate Party, so I guess I have
two. Wow, there you go. So you're you're with me with the ultra uncanceled. I have a women's match. I have a women's match in first place. So
you win.
Yeah, I know the two of us are very, very uncanceled.
Very woke.
But very, very woke. But yeah, what's been up with you other than not being canceled? Apparently,
I've my sleep has been all sorts of messed up. I ended up watching the DDT show we're going to talk about today at like 4 a.m. And I haven't slept since then. So I probably also won't be yelling. And it's a good thing that the show, largely it was pretty all right. So I don't have to yell because, I'm pretty tired. And I will be having some sweet dreams like the DDT show title after we're done with this.
The Royal Rumble show, I mean, overall, I wouldn't call it like a great show or anything. I actually think last year's was probably better because last year had, I don't know. It was the last 2 years, it's like they can't seem to get everything together. Like 2018, you had two really good Rumbles and then a bunch of terrible title matches. I couldn't even remember what the title matches were in 2018 until someone reminded me. That was the fucking Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn handicap match against AJ.
Oh, God, yeah.
And the Mayor Kane triple threat with Brock and Braun.
Yeah, those were bad.
Those are both really bad. And the you know, the Rumbles themselves were good, though. The first Women's Rumble was awesome. And like the Men's Rumble, the Shinsuke one, I remember being pretty good, too. Last year, they had a lot of really good, like, well, they had two really good matches that were for the titles, the Becky Asuka title match and the Finn and Brock title match. Both of those were, like, 4-star-plus matches to me. Yeah, Women's Rumble was awful. I don't know what they did for Women's Rumble last year, but it was really bad. And I was trying to remember the Men's Rumble. I don't even really remember it, so it couldn't have been that good.
I think I liked it okay, but, like, not on, like, I think it was, like, I probably had, like, 3.5 or something. I think I enjoyed it enough. I can't remember who won, but I think I liked it.
The Men's Rumble last year would have been won by Seth Rollins, Mr. Burn It Down.
Oh, that makes sense why I don't remember it.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't really remember the Men's Rumble that well, so it can't be anything that great. But, yeah, they can't seem to get the Rumbles to be good and the non-Rumble matches to be good the same year anymore. This year, again, the Rumbles were good. The non-Rumble matches were pretty bad other than, like, one match. So we'll talk about it. Or we're going to talk about it right now, I guess. Let's start with the Falls Count Anywhere match. Oh, first of all, I'm going to say I didn't watch the pre-show. I assume you didn't watch the pre-show either, Jack.
So, like, I turned it on for, like, a minute, and Andrade Carrillo was on. And I watched it for, like, 30 seconds, and then I thought, I don't want to do this. So then I stopped. So, yeah, I didn't watch the pre-show.
But, yeah, so the opener for you and me and for everybody else who's smart enough not to watch the pre-show was Roman Reigns versus King Corbin in a Falls Count Anywhere match. It's a real hot open to the show and endless Roman entrance while we introduce random foreigner announce teams, and like the crowd was like half booing Roman, but not like enough to be like super interesting. So I don't know, it was like a very boring opening to the show. And then it kind of continued with like a really boring walk and brawl type match. There was like 2 seconds of in-ring action. Roman did a move that I don't know if I've ever seen him do before. I don't watch Friday Night SmackDown, so I don't really know. Maybe he has busted it out. But, like, he did that move that's, like, you start at, like, a backdrop position and then, like, move over in almost, like, a guillotine across the guy's midsection. Do you know what that move's called? Because I've been trying to
think about it. I don't, because I also do not watch Friday Night SmackDown.
But I don't – I've never seen him do that move before, so that's cool. He has a new move, I guess. But, yeah, they – you know, they bumped a little bit on the outside. Roman, like – you know that thing he does where he like loads up the Superman punch? That looks so stupid that looks so dumb when he was like on the floor, like in a street fight, and he's like, let me do my goofy cartoon load up. And I'm like,
he's gotta load the gun. And then it's so fucking dumb, but I love it.
But it's like it's one thing in the ring, but on the floor it looks incredibly stupid.
Oh, absolutely.
And then Corbin took advantage of this very obvious signal, like choke slamming him through the table. That looked good. But then we took a long – but, like, every time this match would get even a little bit good, they would take, like, a long walk into the crowd and completely kill momentum. You know, he gave it, like, a Samoan drop through 2 tables. The crowd at this point started, like, chanting for USA, which I think was because the announcers that got kicked out of the table were Chinese announcers. And if that's why, fuck this crowd. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah, that would make sense. I mean, they're in Texas, so yeah.
WWE crowds are so bad. Like the modern WWE crowd, we're going to talk about them throughout the night, and they're just like the worst crowd in wrestling history.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and then the match hits like its absolute nadir when Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Roode suddenly appear out the crowd and jump Roman. Which, first of all, why did they wait this long in a no DQ match anyway? But no, the Usos run out to make the save, and this is where the fucking shaky cam go over. Oof. Like the camera was shaking so much, I legitimately was starting to feel sick. And I was like, what are we doing with the shaky
cam? Oh, it was horrible.
You know, there are some people that will tell you, I've seen this on Twitter, like, oh, you're making this shit up. The WWE doesn't do shaky cam or any of that stuff. People just say that. I'm like, literally, what are you watching? Like, the camera, they might as well have had another camera on this cameraman, like, shaking this camera up and down. I mean, it was so ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, like, he's just like the camera is like fucking going off in the stratosphere and just like fucking shaking all around. And then finally, meanwhile, Corbin and Roman are gone. for like, I don't know, a good 2 minutes or something.
Oh, yeah.
They might as well be off having, they might as well be off having fucking tea. Because like the match just turns into a completely different match. You know, I'm almost getting sick from the camera work. And finally, they Roman and Corbin reemerge. Roman throws Corbin into a porta potty for some reason. This spot made no sense. Corbin didn't have any. The people joking on Twitter, oh, he's gonna be covered in shit. He comes out of the porta potty. He looks like he just took a shower. Like he doesn't have anything on him at all. What the fuck was the point? And then he's told Roman like threw the porta potty over. But Corbin gets out and he's like, just fighting him again. Like, what was the point of that then? He no-sold. It would have been like if they did that fucking dumpster spot in 1998 with the fucking New Age Outlaws and Cactus Jack and Terry Funk. And like if Mick Foley and Terry Funk just got the dumpster, like, oh, we're fine. We don't have any trash on us and you just threw us off the stage. We're all right. Like, what's the point of that then? But yeah,
that was really bad. They even could have paid it off because, like, Corbin put the dog food on him, so they could have made the shit look like dog food or something. Like, they could have done that. It would have been incredibly easy, but no, they are anti-shit. Corbin, and they also just wouldn't call it a porta potty, which was also pretty funny.
But yeah, Corbin comes out of the porta potty without a speck of dirt on him or anything, and he's totally fine from the thing getting thrown over. And the match just keeps going, and Corbin starts hitting like the world's weakest chair shots on top of the fucking Astros dugout, and just keeps going and going and going. And finally, Roman hits the Superman punch and the spear for the pin. I just wrote, "Fuck this match." I gave it a dud. I guess I need to give it a quarter star in Grapple to officially recognize my rating. But like, I mean, they did a couple cool things, but it just went on forever. And like, there was every time they do anything interesting, they would go back to the fucking walk and brawl. And there's a long portion of the match that had nothing to do with the two participants. So this was awful, completely terrible.
Oh yeah, I'd agree. I also went like a dud on it because yeah, I mean, I don't like walk and brawl as much to begin with. And this was, it was interesting at parts, and I certainly laughed at like the porta potty spot and like Corbin and Reigns just disappearing for like 2 minutes. But like largely this match was just Roman walks with Corbin for a little bit, does a punch, and then they walk. It felt like they walked around the entire fucking stadium by the end of it. And it was just brutal, especially to start the show. Cause I thought that if the rest of the show was going to be like this, we were going to be in for a long night, but turns out this was easily the worst thing on the show by a fucking mile. Well, yeah, almost a mile.
No, I think this. You have something. Oh, you say the worst thing on the show by a mile, but not.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Oh, it was the worst, but like, yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. The Women's Royal Rumble was the second match. First of all, why in God's name would you have Jerry the King Lawler call this? Like, what the fuck?
That had to be like Corey a Grays were getting really horny, and it was bad.
Why can't we have like a woman on there? Like, I don't understand. It's very, like, we can't get Renee on commentary for this or something. It's very weird. First two were Alexa Bliss and Bianca Belair. Bianca got a pretty decent little pop, and they had a cool little opening segment. You could just jump in here if you have anything to say about anything I'm talking about. I'm just going to go through the entrance. Mighty Molly was number three. The crowd didn't react that loudly to that. I was kind of surprised. I don't know if they, maybe they don't remember her.
Probably not.
Nikki Cross was number four. Alexa was very happy since they're friends. The Nikki Cross Alexa Bliss thing is one of the weirdest stories. Like one of those things where it's like when people talk about how WWE is like all about storytelling and stuff. Do you know that storyline? Like, do you know how that worked out?
Not really. I mean, I kind of know that like Nikki Cross is like her weird like friend servant.
Well, let me just explain this really quickly.
Okay.
Yeah, let me explain this really quickly. So Alexa's a heel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Alexa heel takes on as this Nikki playing baby face who doesn't know she's being taken. So Alexa the heel, Nikki the baby face, are just happy. She's doing it's classic setup for Nikki to finally realize Alexa's using her and they have a big feud. But then it just goes on and on and on. And this feud like kind of killed, I think, Bayley as a baby face. I think Bayley was the one involved, but just went on and on and on forever. And then finally, one day, instead of Bliss or Bliss getting turned on by Nikki when Nikki realizes she's using her, Alexa just turns face out of nowhere, and the two of them are just a face tag team forever, and they're still friends. It's like one of the weirdest, like fucking stories they've ever told. It just makes no sense at all. It's like the Rowan trying, like, someone was asking about, like, what happened in the Brian Rowan, Rowan Roman, like, murder mystery. Do you know what the answer to that one was?
It turned out to be Rowan.
It turned out to be Aaron Rowan. And then they had the twin. Okay. Forget the twin. That's funny, but that's nothing to do with the solution.
It's the only thing I remember. Okay.
It turned out to be Eric Rowan, and Brian was like, "How could you, man? You went too far." So Brian turned face. Eric Rowan brought Luke Harper back. They had a tag team match on a pay per view. I think Hell in a Cell, actually, that terrible show. And then immediately after that, Eric Rowan gets like traded to Raw or drafted to Raw, or whatever the fuck. And Luke Harper goes back to the mothballs where he came from and gets immediately released. It's like, and this is like months of build. They did this for that payoff. So, yeah, I don't know.
It's a great at telling stories. What can you say? Master storytelling.
So Nikki Cross came in anyway. That's where we were. And Nikki and Alexa cleaned house and, you know, had a big hug. Lana was number five. She has a microphone. She calls herself, I'm quoting her here, the greatest WW superstar in the world. I laughed way too hard at her for getting the E. She cuts a very generic heel promo without the Russian accent. When did she like stop being Russian? I completely missed that, I guess.
I feel like it was kind of like a while ago, and it just kind of suddenly happened where she just like decided the Russian accent was too much effort, so she just kind of stopped doing it, which is bad because like it was kind of the only thing making her unique and not just another, I don't know.
See, now I thought this was setting up like the overconfident heel talks her way all the way down into the ring and then gets immediately tossed out thing, but that didn't even happen. She just was in the match at that point. And the crowd, like, I don't even know why the crowd bothered chanting USA at her. She's not even doing the Russian thing anymore. Number six was Mercedes Martinez. And she cleaned houses with suplexes and stuff. This is where it really started picking up. And
yeah, that was cool. That was awesome. Her being in this was really cool.
Yeah. Seven was Liv Morgan, who immediately eliminated Lana with the world's weakest shoulder block while Lana was on the apron. And then Lana retaliated by eliminating Liv, which, by the way, I'm going to say it's every time they do this, makes no fucking sense. Why can a wrestler not in the match eliminate someone in the match? They've done that for years. I'm just like, why isn't every single person eliminated then come back and attack the person eliminated them? It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, number eight is Mandy Rose. Mandy Rose is awesome here. I guess I haven't watched a lot of SmackDown. I didn't realize that Mandy Rose, I mean, I knew she was a very attractive woman, but I didn't know that she like was like a good wrestler now. I had no clue.
Yeah, me either. I'm used to seeing her just be completely like dog shit, but like she had a couple of good kicks and she looked like a pretty competent pro wrestler, which is very surprising because usually people don't really improve in this company.
Yeah. So she looked really good and she beat the shit out of Nikki until Nikki made a comeback. Nine was Candice LeRae. Bianca, who we haven't talked a lot about yet, but she eliminates Molly here. Alexa almost eliminates Mandy, except Otis was laying on the floor. I guess they're doing like a Beauty and the Beast romance thing, but like he basically laid there and like let her land on him and then let her like walk all over him, which I'm sure a lot of people on Twitter were very jealous of him for. But since her feet touched him instead of the floor, she was not eliminated and she got back in the ring. That was actually really funny. This company usually swings and misses on comedy, but that was really like, I was like laughing pretty hard. So
I like Otis in general for some reason. He just makes me laugh. Yeah. I don't know why. It's really dumb. But
I mean, he is pretty funny. I don't know. It's a stupid comedy gimmick, but at least it's actually like most of the time their stupid comedy gimmicks are not funny. So at least this one is fun.
Yeah, and then he was like outside supporting Mandy Rose, like saying things. So you just hear him chime in the background, and that made some of the more, like when they weren't doing much in the ring, that it helped my enjoyment of the match for sure.
Number 10 was Sonya Deville, who earlier backstage had basically promised to help Mandy win, even eliminate herself if need be. And then Mercedes and Sonya had like a really fun little strike exchange, and before Sonya and Mandy teamed up to eliminate her. 11 was, of course, that most diabolical of heels, Kairi Sane. Adorable Japanese woman who they had to make into a heel because, damn it, she's not one of us. She's a foreigner. And all foreigners must eventually be heels, I guess.
And she still has her whimsical pirate music, and people are still cheering her. But nope, she's got a whatever that umbrella thing is now.
She's a dastardly heel. Number 12 was Mia Yim. She didn't really do much. Belair used like Bliss as like a weapon here, and then she used her to like knock Nikki Cross off the floor, off the apron to the floor, and eliminate her. That was kind of cool. And then Sonya like inadvertently knocked Mandy Rose off the apron and right into Otis's arms, who caught her. But then Sonya was also knocked to the floor, and he wasn't able to catch them both, and they all fell to the ground, and they were both eliminated. A sad end to the Otis tale, but I don't know. I thought they got rid of Fire and Desire, as their team name is, too soon, because I thought they were the best thing in the matchup at this point. But that was my Fire and Desire take.
Yeah, I would agree there.
Number 13 was Dana Brooke. She doesn't do much. And then Bianca press slams Candace out, and that's apparently her fifth elimination, tying the Women's Rumble record. Bianca was like the other big star of the match up to this point, and you know, would last a while longer, and she was really good in this match. At this point, Alexa eliminates Kairi Sane, who did nothing. Number 14 was Tamina, who I honestly forgot was still employed before she came out. Did you know Tamina was employed by this company? I really had no clue.
Absolutely not. And then they had Tamina come in, and she does this like face off with Bianca Belair, and they're trying to hype this up as like some big thing. And I'm like, I couldn't give less of a shit. Tamina sucks.
Yeah. Like, why drag Bianca down like that? Yeah. Bianca eliminated her in 2 seconds after that and stared her for the sixth elimination. That set the new record. Number 15 was Dakota Kai. At this point, Alexa eliminated Mia. Number 16 was Chelsea Green with Robert Stone. So, yes, Robbie E made it onto a WWE pay-per-view. Garrett Kidney somewhere was just like, yes!
Yeah, he just stood at the end of the ramp and, like, stroked his chin and then went to the back. That's what all he got dressed up.
Yeah, that was his entire airing on the show. That was pretty amazing.
Then talked about how he's looking for championship matches for his clients. It's like, what the fuck are we doing here?
Chelsea dumps Dakota immediately, but then she gets dumped immediately from behind by Alexa, which seems kind of pointless, but sure. And then Belair eliminates Dana, poor Dana Brooke, for her seventh elimination. And then we're back to the two we started with. And this is where I said I hope the match picks up a little bit, because I kind of thought it had slowed down. But it did, thankfully. So they had a cool little exchange here with Bianca and Alexa. They both end up on the apron. And after Alexa kept like holding on to Bianca Belair's like giant hair, I guess what we call like a bead, right? Braid is the word I was actually looking for. She kept holding on to her giant braid, but Bianca like basically like let her go and then like pulled her back in and like slammed Alexa face first into the ring post. That looked sick as hell and like really, that looked really cool. And that eliminated Alexa for Bianca's eighth elimination. And then number 17 was Charlotte Flair, which was, you know, like, oh, business is picking up. And then she and Bianca fought to a stalemate. 18 was Naomi, who got a really big pop for her return. I guess she'd been out for months. I didn't even realize it. But, yeah, I was, like, pretty surprised at the level of pop she got.
Yeah, me too. I've always liked Naomi, but I didn't know that she was that over. Because, yeah, I mean, she definitely got a surprising pop. Good for her. She's always been pretty good.
Yeah, she's good. So I just didn't know she was that over. 19 was Beth Phoenix, who, well, that was a cool little thing. I mean, she was not a big surprise because she was in the thing 2 years ago, but she looked good in this match, and she gets busted open pretty quick, as we'll talk about, and like the entire rest of the match. But yeah, so she's in here at 19 and cleans house and goes right to Charlotte and Naomi. 20 is Toni Storm, who also goes right for Charlotte. And then Charlotte finally eliminates Bianca Belair, which ends her 33-minute run. So definitely a good run for Bianca, probably close to the MVP of the match. 21 is Kelly Kelly, who, again, gets like a really large pop. Like, what is this Kelly Kelly nostalgia? She did 2 years ago, too. Like, she was always fucking terrible. What are these people cheering for?
I don't know. Maybe they're horny. That's the only thing that explains it. I fucking don't know. She sucks.
She also gave Toni Storm a stink face, which, like, imagine rubbing your, I mean, this is a little more horny than this thing usually gets, but, like, she rubbed her tiny ass in the face of a woman with a much larger posterior, you know? It's like, this kind of seems like you should have reversed this, probably. But, yeah, then Beth eliminates Charlotte at this point. 22 is Sarah Logan. She gets eliminated 2 seconds by Charlotte, so Thanks for coming, Sarah. But Charlotte spends so long posing that Kelly Kelly almost eliminates her, which that would have been hilarious. Kelly Kelly eliminating Charlotte.
I was hoping for it.
It would have been really funny. I was like, that's a WrestleMania feud. Charlotte and Kelly Kelly. Battle of the Blondes. But no, Charlotte instead eliminates Kelly Kelly to pretty big boos for that. This is where I first realized, I'm like, wait, Charlotte's supposed to be a baby face, but she's not acting like a face in this match at all. Maybe she's just going to go heel against Becky. I mean, like, you could see that, I guess. But I think she's supposed to be a face, so I don't know. 23 is Natalya, and she and Beth do like a big double powerbomb on Charlotte. 24 is the real shooter, Xia Li, and she lays out everybody with kicks and like busts open the back of Beth's head really bad. Like this giant, they keep bleeding a gusher for the rest of this match. I couldn't believe Beth, like they let Beth stay in this match. And the reason why they let Beth stay in this match is actually incredibly stupid. Like they needed her for one fucking spot that we'll get to much later. But like for that, you made this woman wrestle out here with a goddamn cut in the back of her head.
Yeah, especially since this company is usually like pretty proactive about that blood stuff. But like, she was fucking gushing. Like half her head was fucking red to the point where like I didn't know if it was hair dye at first, and then I realized it was blood. I'm like, oh shit, that's a lot.
Look, as we'll get to, there's a very important spot. Uh-huh. You cannot fucking make this spot. 25 is Zelina Vega, who doesn't really do anything. 26 is Shotzi Blackheart. Do you have any idea who this woman is? I have no
idea. Okay, so I know she's like an American indie girl who did like some stuff with Evolve and Shine. And I think she just debuted on NXT. I don't think she's very good from what people say. So when she came out, I was like, why the fuck is she in this match? Especially since like, they have a shit ton of women employed. They could have probably dragged one out. That's better. So yeah,
I've never even heard of her. I don't know who she is.
She's like, she's not, I've never seen a match first. It's been above like 3 stars. The only thing really I know is that she's done some stuff with Evolve. So that say as you will.
At this point, Naomi does her crazy, like not eliminated thing, but it makes no sense. Cause like, okay, she's at the base of the stairs and the they shouldn't have showed us this. They cut to a replay. She just jumps across to the barricade for no reason. Like, why didn't she just go back up the stairs?
Oh, it was cool that she could do that in like land, but I saw
it's not her fault. Why the fuck did the replay people show that she just jumped across for no reason? It looked way more impressive that she was like hanging on there before we saw that she had jumped across to jump across. So I don't know.
Once they showed that replay, I was kind of just like, all right, did we have to do the obligatory spot? And then the way they ended up paying off that spot where she just walked on the announce tables for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then eventually set up that shitty bridge, which I was so hoping was going to break.
Yeah.
And then
they always have these people get back in there, like these, the people who like get thrown out, like whether it's Morrison or Kofi or Naomi, they always have them immediately get eliminated. I assume because if they don't, then like, you know.
Yeah.
If they fuck up, it's not a big deal. But like, it looks so stupid every time when they get back in the ring. It's like, oh, I made it. Okay, now you're gone.
I can go like a year or two without any of these spots, like because we've seen them every single year from the exact same people, and it's starting to get a little bit. It's losing its coolness factor that it once had.
Number 27 is Carmella, who gives Natalya a huge Rana. Beth is like really bleeding at this point, to the point where I really couldn't believe they let her continue, but we'll get to why in a second. Charlotte gets thrown to the floor, but through the ropes, so she's not eliminated. 28 is Tegan Nox, who doesn't really do anything. And then 29 is Santina Marella, which is why Beth Phoenix had to fucking bleed out of the back of her skull for like 25 minutes or whatever, because she had a comedy spot to do with Santino Marella in drag. That is why they couldn't eliminate her early. I was like cracking up laughing when I realized that was the reason. Because Santina gets in the ring, she has a big stare down with Beth. The announcers remind us, but Santina threw out Beth to win Miss WrestleMania Battle Royal like in 2011 or whatever the fuck. I'm like, who even remembers that?
Deep lore of Santina that like anyone gives a shit.
Yeah, the crowd did not like this. They were not into this at all. And like Santina has this big like stare down with Beth and Natalya on either side. And then she pulls out she's not really trans. I mean, it's just Santina Marella in drag. He pulls out the fucking snake. They were saying she. I don't know. But Santina pulls out the. I'm just going to not use pronouns to be safe.
John, remember we're the woke ones for our women, like for our women in our match of the year list. So we know what's right.
Santina pulls out the Cobra and like acts like Santina's going to like use it on both of them, but then turns the Cobra on himself. And like just nailed it. And I'm laughing because it got no reaction at all. He like hits himself with the Cobra and like throws himself all out of the ring, and the crowd like lightly boos, and that's it. Like, that was so fucking stupid. For that, this woman had to bleed out of the back of her head for 25 minutes. Like, what are we doing? Anyway, we couldn't just cancel the Santina spot. That was that important.
You just find someone else next. Find Deanna fucking Perazzo or whatever.
And throw send her Stephanie out there. McMahon out there. Who gives a fuck?
In her fucking business suit or whatever. Throw just like Lacey Evans' daughter. I don't know. That'd be funny.
Number 30 is Shayna Baszler, who, I wrote down at the point, could easily win this. She eliminated a whole bunch of people. And this is where Naomi made her bridge to get back in. They already talked about. But it came down to basically Shayna, Beth, Natalya, and Charlotte. And Charlotte was still on the floor at that point. Beth turns on Natalya and eliminates her, just like she did 2 years ago in the first one. These wrestlers are always so fucking stupid in these Royal Rumbles. If you have a team in the final four, and they do the same exact thing with the men's Rumble, eliminate the other people and then fight each other. Like, why are you turning on your partner? Wouldn't you rather get down to a 50-50 shot against your partner than a 33% shot against two other people? I don't understand.
Well, Beth Phoenix's defense, she may have had a little bit of head trauma going on. So
That's true. But yeah, it never makes any sense. Anyway, Charlotte tries to sneak up like a true heel and eliminate them both, but neither of them go out. And then she and Shayna have this big long stare down before they can actually fight. Beth tries to eliminate Charlotte from behind, but fails, and Shayna eliminates Beth. And then Charlotte kind of just uses her legs to power Shayna out and win. It was a little bit of a flat ending, I thought, but I still thought this was a really good women's rumble overall. Not as good as the first one, probably, just because I had all the nostalgia pops and the honor of being the first one. I thought this was like a zillion times better than last year's, which really fucking sucked. So I would go 4 stars on this. I was going to give it a star rating. It was really good. Had a really good time with it. A lot of good stuff that I remember for a while, probably. And, the slow parts were a little slow, but this was definitely a very good rumble.
Yeah, I agree. I went 3.5 because, but I still really enjoyed it too. Last year's was just a fucking train wreck. So it was definitely a lot better than that. It felt cohesive. There were definitely some spots where I felt my attention waning, like some of the later, like Beth and Natalya stuff I didn't really care about because I think Natalya fucking sucks, but that's whatever. But yeah, there was like minor quibbles I had with it, like the Naomi thing bothered me too, but there was a lot of cool stuff in here and it didn't really feel like a waste of time. And it really felt like they made Bianca and Shayna look like big deals, which, sometimes building stars is hard for them. So it was a good thing that they actually put two people who they could use in their future over strong.
Yeah. Up next was the SmackDown Women's Title match, Bayley versus Lacey Evans. So they cut to Lacey's daughter at ringside, who immediately starts picking her nose, which was really funny. Supposed baby face, the trad wife, Lacey Evans, gets booed out of the building, and Bayley also gets booed, so the crowd likes nobody. This is like, Bayley did that fake leg injury thing, which I'm like, oh my god, but at least she like ditched it right away. So that's fine. But it was so fucking boring. Just I have nothing to say about this match because nothing happened until the very end when Bayley got her knees up on a moonsault and I guess kind of grabbed the tights, but it barely looked like she did on the camera angle. And that was the finish. Getting knees up on a moonsault was the finish. So a perfect ending to a hilariously awful match. 0.5 star. The crowd, who was very into the Rumble, and I guess you're always going to like lose the crowd a little bit after Rumble, but like, yeah, they did not rally behind the trad wife, Lacey Evans here. And this was really terrible.
Yeah. The only thing I have in my notes for this one is Lacey Evans' daughter picks nose and then a bunch of dots and then 1 star. Like that's the only thing I wrote down. And so I don't remember anything else that happened to this match. So yeah, it was boring.
This was really bad. So I definitely would agree. So Universal title strap match, The Fiend Bray Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan. This is like not the four corner drag rule. Thankfully, it was the pinner submission rule. So they have done those in the past. It's pretty rare, but like, you know, I've mentioned in the chat, like fully loaded 99 with The Rock and Triple H in a strap match. That was like the pin rules, not the drag rules, but the drag to all four corners is much more common. First of all, no more red lights. I was very sad. They didn't do
that. Yeah, me too.
I don't know if that's temporary because of like the baseball stadium or if like that's permanent.
It would have made it look cooler.
But yeah, the crap is like really dead. Wyatt at one point like knocked Bryan out of the air on a dive, which looked like shit. Like it looked like he just kind of put his hands up a little bit and Bryan like kind of knocked into his hands and fell to the ground. Like that looks so terrible. Fiend just this match. If I don't, there's people on Twitter that insist, and even in our Slack, I would get into it with like a couple of people, and like people were like, "Oh, the match was good on the finish and blah blah blah." I'm like, "How is this good?" The majority of this match was the Fiend hitting Daniel Bryan with a whip. I am pantomiming a whip, which none of you can see, but he's just whipping Daniel Bryan to complete silence. What is entertaining or good about that exactly? Because that was most of this match. So if you like this match, I'm assuming you really like watching a man whip another man. Because I have no other explanation for all these people on Twitter and all these people in the Slack, Voice of Wrestling Slack, that like this match. I really don't get it. Like, what was good about it?
Look, we live in a horny world. So I guess that explains it. By the way, did you see the contract signing for this where the Fiend stabbed his hand with a pencil and signed in blood?
Yeah.
And that was good shit.
The Fiend is hilarious, and I enjoy him very, you know, on an ironic level, but, like, I don't understand the people arguing this match is good. There was nothing good about this match.
Oh, no. It wasn't as, like, bad as the last match, but that doesn't mean it was good.
No. I like the last one better.
One star in both.
I went, like, 3.5 on that one, I think. This one was fucking awful. That one was, like, there was some good, cool little, like, the Bryan comeback was fun. It was much shorter. This felt like it went on forever. And it was just this man whipping this man over and over and over again. Just, this is so fucking, and the crowd doesn't fucking care at all. They're just completely dead, which I guess they are in lots of matches, but they're so, like, this is supposed to be your Universal title match, and they're completely dead for all of this. You know, Bryan, the only highlight up to this point was like Fiend threw a pretty good lariat on the floor. And that's about that. Like, wow. One good lariat, way to go. And then Bryan like low blowed him repeatedly because you're not a WWE babyface unless you hit a low blow, which we'll talk about soon enough too. In the men's rumble match, DDTs him on the announce table. And then, you know, Bryan kicks the Fiend and whips him while the Fiend keeps telling him to do it some more, which was fine, I guess. Fiend gets Sister Abigail out of nowhere for a two count. And then we had the other legitimately cool spot in the match where Bryan, and this is the spot that also made me want to fuck kill somebody when they, I saw what they did with it after. So Fiend has Bryan in the mandible claw, right? Mm-hmm. So that's cool. I mean, mandible claw, whatever. Bryan counters it into the yes lock. Now Bryan countering the mandible claw in the yes lock, that was legitimately awesome. That was the first thing this match where I'm like, okay, this is really cool. Fiend gets out of it immediately without even breaking a fucking sweat, and fucking Corey Graves starts opining that the Fiend, you see, he is a magic man and he has magical powers, and he is completely he's unkillable, I guess, by submissions. He is completely immune from all submissions. He can break out of them immediately. The world is a video game for the Fiend, and he has the ultimate cheat code to break all submissions, I guess. He just presses a button.
Was that video game to you? Did they actually say that?
No, that's me. But like, okay, I don't understand. Like, I don't understand what else it could be, because like he didn't struggle. He just broke the whole, like the hole just vanished into thin air. Like I said, I wasn't going to scream on the show, but I want to scream right now because it was so fucking stupid and it ruined a good spot. Just let the man struggle. He can be a big monster and still struggle in a hole and struggle to get out of it. He doesn't have to immediately get out of it with his magic fucking powers. That was so goddamn stupid.
Also, the humor of hearing someone say, like, Fiend hit Lariat. Just Fiend did this. It's just so, just fucking, why is this a thing?
And there was a total wet fart of a finish. The Fiend just, like, he no-sells Bryan's knees, and then he does, like, a very weak-looking mandible claw choke slam for the pin. The crowd, like, really took a shit all over that finish, and they died instantly. So, again, a couple spots you could call cool if you want to stretch it, but one of them was completely ruined immediately, and I'm not giving a good rating for a one good lariat. So it gets 1.5 stars, and it fucking likes it.
It's about where I'm at, too. I didn't really put a precise rating on this because this is where I started to get pretty sleepy, so I kind of just slapped up in my head. Like, it's around that 1.5, 2-star range. Definitely not higher than that.
I don't see what the people saying it's even, like, a good match or, like, we're watching. Like, there was nothing good about it. Anyway, I don't want to keep ranting Raymond about it. It's just so fucking stupid. And then Bryan gets, like, carried out to complete silence, and you know they really want the crowd to give him, like, the big, like, yeah, you tried, standing ovation. But the crowd doesn't react because the crowd doesn't fucking care that Daniel Bryan lost to the cartoon fucking Fiend. Like, it's not like, oh, you gave it all, your all, and, you know, came up short against the monster. It's not like he just got killed again by Brock Lesnar. He lost to the cartoon man, okay? The Fiend might as well have taken out his giant mallet and hit him with it. Because nobody...
I wish you would have done that.
It's not real. It's just stupid. Anyway.
The Dream Match Tour rules on.
The Fiend fucking sucks. The Dream Match Tour rules on. The Fiend fucking sucks. I enjoy him because he sucks so bad and it's funny, but don't try to make The Fiend is good actually happen, folks. You're just not correct. Match number 5, the Raw Women's title, Becky Lynch versus Asuka. Again, the match was kind of dull and the crowd was not that into it at all. And then Asuka started taking these ridiculous bumps to try to get any kind of reaction. Like, Becky does, like, a front suplex and, like, just tosses her off the apron. Like, and Asuka just, like, slams face first into the ground. I'm like, that looks like a fucking New Japan bump. The only difference is if this was a New Japan crowd, they would have actually reacted to it. Whereas the WWE fans are just like, eh. And then fucking Becky gives Asuka an exploder into the barricade. Looks like it sucked. I'm reminded of the Safe Company, TM. So they're just bumping all over, trying to get anything resembling a reaction, and still getting absolutely nothing. Asuka returns the favor in the ring and, like, drops Becky right at her neck on a German suplex. I mean, the match was sick as hell when it comes to, like, all these bumps, but, like, the crowd's not reacting to them at all. She kicks her in the head repeatedly. Like, they show it on slow-mo. She kicked her right in the face and still got zero reaction. The crowd finally got into it a little bit when she just kept kicking her when Becky asked for more. And they had, like, a really, like, fast-paced, like, counter exchange that did, you know, the crowd started to get up a little bit more. But then the finishing sequence was, like, really goofy and fell out of nowhere with Becky, like, Asuka in the gut to, quote-unquote, knock the mist out of her. But, like, you know, Asuka, like, spit it straight up in the air, so it looked very goofy. And then immediately get the disarmer for the win. So, I don't know. I went 3.5. It was good. There was a lot of stuff I liked. The crowd didn't care. And then the ending was out of nowhere. So it couldn't touch last year's match between Becky and Asuka. But it was still good. Best non-Rumble thing on the show by a mile.
Yeah, I'd agree. I went 3.5 on it as well. The crowd definitely just contributed to a lot of my disappointment with this because they apparently don't know how to react to anything that isn't Chinese people having their table broke.
I guess so.
So I guess that's cool. But yeah, I mean, it was a good match. If it would have been in front of a better crowd, I think I would have enjoyed it more. But like you said, the finishing sequence was a little bit sloppy, but there was a lot of stuff in here that was really cool. And I felt like if they could have, like, been that way the entire match instead of kind of losing it near the end, and if the crowd was a little bit hotter, I think it could have been at least close to last year's match. But last year's match was one of my favorites, probably in WWE for the entire year because I didn't watch too much of it. But
yeah, it's been number 2 WWE match of the year. So
didn't really hit that level, unfortunately, which is a disappointment.
Yeah. Finally, the men's Royal Rumble, except it took 10 years to start because first we needed the Street Profits doing a promo that went on fucking forever. Then we need an entrance for special guest commentator Booker T, who at least was here to set the commentary position, so thank you, Booker. But then Rusev and Lashley, apparently we learned that they got in a brawl earlier today and both got taken to the hospital, so they're out. So, okay. Who cares, I guess. Brock Lesnar is number one, of course. Elias is number two. He like strums and like talks his way down the fucking thing. And his walk with Elias gets by far the biggest reaction on the show. So the only thing this crowd cared about was Elias's catchphrase, I guess.
Of course.
But yeah, he literally starts singing about how he's a sacrificial lamb, which I thought was funny. But Brock goes to charge him on the floor finally, but like almost trips and falls right to the barricade, which was really funny. And then he breaks the guitar of Elias, eliminates him pretty easily. Number three was Big Red Eric Rowan and his cage thing, and Brock clotheslined him out in 2 seconds. And this is where I was already like crying with laughter, because Eric Rowan's like, oh, the big monster. I tried to kill Roman Reigns. I am a mystery creature. And he gets killed in 2 seconds. It was so great. I was like dying. Number four is Robert Roode, who Brock sold for like two punches for him. So that's pretty good. But after that half a second, he just immediately clotheslines him and F5s him and tosses him out. Five is John Morrison, who just returned and gets the slow-mo, and Brock eliminates him in 9 seconds. At this point, I was loving this. I'm like, yes, just kill the entire roster.
Oh, it was great. I was hoping. I was like thinking, I'm like, oh, good. Maybe we'll be done sooner.
Look, they've already had him beat everybody in the company anyway. Who gives a fuck? He's like an all-in-one match. Like the people who were like, I did see a few people on Twitter being like, oh, this is very bad and all. I don't like to see this. And Brock is burying the company. Like, where have you idiots been for the last decade? He's buried the entire company. It's past tense. He has beaten everyone in this company there is to beat a million times over. Every time someone beats him, he just immediately beats them again. That's reality. At least him doing it in one match is kind of fucking funny. So
yeah, good on him. It was kind of cool. I mean, like, he was being dominant. I'm like, do you really care about fucking Robert Roode? Like, who gives a shit about Robert Roode?
Some of these people they used in this were a little bad. Up next is Kofi Kingston. Yes.
Yeah.
The crowd. So Kofi's trying to get his revenge for being F5'd and pinned in 4 seconds to lose the WWE title. And the crowd does go nuts for his 2 seconds of offense before Brock takes back over. But Kofi at least was the first person to survive until the next entrance, so good for him. Number seven was Rey Mysterio, who also had a beef with Brock that was never paid off. And I don't know, Brock and Rey like weirdly got their wires crossed or something briefly. That was a little weird. So they just had like a weirdly like awkward sequence. But then Brock just lays both of them out, throwing them around, and they roll to the floor. Eight at this point is Big E. So Big E, he rallies the troops on the floor, and he gets Kofi and Rey back up and says, let's go get Brock 3-on-1. And normally, like, having three baby faces go after one heel would be death for the crowd. But Brock is, like, on such another level compared to this geek roster that the crowd goes fucking nuts for the three baby faces going. And they're like, yeah, get him! Get Brock! It's the only way you idiots can beat him, so go! Like, they're going crazy for this, for 3-on-1 advanced baby faces. It's so fucking funny. And then Brock proves the crowd right because he immediately eliminates Rey, eliminates Big E, and then F5s Kofi to the floor for 7 eliminations. The crowd actually seemed really angry when he threw out Kofi, at least, too. So like, this is where I thought they were like getting pretty restless. You know, I don't know. Did you think anything at this point? It was cool, but also, like, really got to kill the New Day like that? Like, that seems a little excessive.
We
couldn't find anyone else on the fucking 5,000-person roster to sacrifice. I mean,
Heavy Machinery were supposed to be in this match, and they fucking weren't in it. Where is Otis?
Yeah.
Was he fucking? I don't know.
Poor Kofi just looks like the biggest dork who ever lived, and it's like...
He already looked like a massive dork when he got beaten.
But, like, why rub the salt in people's people's wounds? I don't get it.
I don't care about anything WWE booking, so I just laughed and then moved on.
Number nine was Cesaro, and Brock leads him immediately and posed with the title. 10 is Shelton Benjamin. That gets like a laugh out of Brock, and that was actually kind of funny. Was, you know, these two were teammates and stuff. And like Paul hugs him on the floor, and Brock hugs him in the ring and convinces him they should be allies. Now, I thought Shelton was going to turn on Brock, and Brock was going to eliminate him, obviously. They didn't even do that. They just have Shelton be like, all right, yeah, I'm going to team up Brock. And Brock turned on him and tossed him out. I'm like, you could not have booked this to make this man look like more of an idiot. So, I mean, it doesn't matter because it's Shelton Benjamin, but like, you couldn't at least let Shelton turn on Brock. Anyway.
I can't remember the last Shelton Benjamin match I've seen.
11 is a real big star, a former Royal Rumble winner, Shinsuke Nakamura. And as he came out, I think I tweeted something like, he's going to get squashed here like he did in the IWGP title match to add. When he like cried afterwards, he lost like 7 minutes. Yeah, and he was even worse than I would have guessed. Brock tossed him out at me like a total buffoon. So I hope he enjoys that surfing, because he's like another fucking geek getting bare here.
That dude probably loves being able to get paid to do nothing, though. Like, he seems like the type of dude who's okay with
it. I guess, but boy, is he getting paid to do nothing. Oh, number 12 is MVP making his return, which, you know, that got a big pop with the crowd. Loved them some MVP. And we got the greatest image of all time, which is Brock, like, dancing to his music. And I was laughing thinking about it, because he's like, yeah, I'm coming. Like, Brock is like dancing. Oh, it was so good. Proc dancing to anything is great.
Oh,
and he tosses, and then on top of that, he tosses MVP out of me. I was like, again, cracking up, laughing. I mean, this match is so fucking. Again, I think if people still cared about the results, if I like the people on Twitter I saw that were able to get angry about this kind of thing, I'm just like, I get it. But also, it's WWE. You can't get angry about any fucking result on WWE. So who cares? 13 is Keith Lee, who, you know, the crowd goes nuts for him, just like putting Brock down with a shoulder block. He actually gets to hang with Brock for a little bit, and the crowd's really into that. And, you know, they do a double clothesline spot and both go down. Number 14 is Braun Strowman. He cleans house on both men. And here is where Braun and Keith Lee both are the two dumbest wrestlers possibly in the history of wrestling. You've just watched this unbeatable man who has dominated this company for the past decade, mm-hmm. who has almost never beaten without the assistance of a low blow, which we'll get to that in a second. And you decided, you're both two giant men, and you decided instead of double-teaming this man, who also is WWE champion, so by tossing him out, you could earn a shot at the World Wrestling Entertainment Championship without having to win this entire Rumble. Instead of double-teaming this man and going after him and trying to toss him out, you fight each other.
Yep.
Why? Why would you ever do that? Why would two human beings why would two human beings on this earth ever in that situation fight each other instead of fighting Brock?
It's truly baffling.
In what universe of all the possible universes would Keith Lee and Braun Strowman, two human beings who exist, choose to fight each other instead of team up on Brock?
Braun is like bigger than Brock too, so if you think about it, like, there's no advantage. Like, if he was
fighting, there's no beef between Keith Lee and Braun Strowman. To my knowledge, I don't even know if they've ever met. I guess they were in that Survivor Series match together, probably, but I don't think they ever fought each other. It was completely baffling that these two men decided they'd rather fight each other than team up on Brock. Anyway, so Brock immediately tosses them both out, like complete fucking idiots, and they completely deserve that.
Of course.
Number 15 is Ricochet, and Brock somehow like fell down when he had him in his arms. I thought he was like having a heart attack or something. I was like, what is it going
on? Wouldn't that have been
like, looked... 16 is Drew McIntyre. So, okay. I really don't understand why people weren't angrier about this. I guess because I just said it really doesn't matter, but people said this wasn't like people defended this elimination. I don't get it. Brock eliminated 13 people by himself, all dispelled off. And you're thinking, okay, at the end of it, someone's going to knock Brock out and be like the biggest hero of all time. The fucking Brock elimination was Ricochet giving him a low blow and fucking Drew McIntyre flying out of nowhere for a Claymore kick. They couldn't even give us a clean Royal Rumble elimination. Not a pinfall, not a submission. Going over the top rope in a battle royal. They couldn't just have Drew McIntyre Claymore kick this motherfucker out. They had to have Ricochet low blow him from behind, and Brock be all distracted and low blowed and blah 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 stand, and then fucking Drew McIntyre Claymore kick him out. Like, what the fuck? I mean, it's not quite as bad as I thought it was in the moment, because at least Drew went on to win the goddamn match. But like, why would you even do that? You're trying to get this man over as a new top babyface, and you're gonna go challenge Brock at WrestleMania. Didn't they have anything from having Seth beat Brock with a bunch of low blows at WrestleMania last year, which looked fucking stupid when he walked around calling himself the fucking Beast Slayer? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm getting mad after I just said I wouldn't get mad about the results, but like, that's so fucking stupid.
To me, it was kind of like, I thought it was dumb for sure, but at the same time, I don't know. It's tough to care. I do like this thing that Brock's weakness is his dick. I think that's pretty funny.
But wait a second. But, people keep saying that's like some big thing. Every man's weakness is their fucking dick.
Yeah.
whose weakness is not their dick? It just makes all these baby faces look like fucking dorks. That no one could ever get one up on Brock without hitting him in the fucking penis. It's so stupid.
Well, we all know Paul Heyman's really into sex stuff, so I guess maybe that's it.
I don't know. I just couldn't believe they did all that just to have an elimination where he gets hit in the dick and then kicked out of the ring. I'm like, why not just have Drew eliminate him? I don't know. Very stupid. And then Drew eliminated Ricochet too. 17 is, I don't, who was 17? I forgot to write this down.
I don't, let me check. Is it on fucking
It probably Wikipedia? Is.
The Miz.
The Miz for 17? Really? Wow. Okay, so Miz got, he got immediately eliminated by Drew McIntyre. 18 was AJ Styles, 19 was Dolph, 20 was, oh God, who was 20? 20 was Carl Anderson. Anderson, I think. Yeah. They all try to team up on Drew as the crowd is like 100% dead here. And this is where the crowd, this is where the match like really took a bad turn because, you know, the crowd would, the fans were like really into that whole Brock thing, you know, as they should be because that was actually like different and cool. Yeah, but they completely died after that. So like if anything, maybe you should have done the Brock thing a little longer, maybe dragged it out to like into the 20s or something. So you go straight from the Brock thing to like the final four. But yeah, there was like this long like dead period between the Brock thing and the final four that just like didn't work at all. But then 21 was Edge, which, okay, Edge came out and finally woke up the crowd. But then after, you know, first of all, the cracked every camera crew misses his first spear back after 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like they were too busy zooming in on some fan of the crowd. So good job, guys. But yeah, so Edge cleans house. Number 22 is King Corbin. And King Corbin is so skilled at killing crowds, he managed to kill this crowd again right after Edge came out after like 10 years on his big return and got like a gigantic pop.
The one dude who people thought would never come back.
The crowd went right back to being dead. That's how like powerful King Corbin's you know, crowd killing skills are, I guess. Yeah, Edge
long may AJ he around here.
Log may he reign. 23 is Matt Riddle. Since he's an internet fave, Corbin immediately eliminated him, which I have to admit, the Vince McMahon like trolling the internet fans that are dumb enough to watch didn't like care about WWE is actually kind of funny. So, way to
Absolutely.
Go. 24 is Luke Gallows, and Drew tosses out Corbin. 25 is Randy Orton. He lays out everybody with RKOs except Edge, and you know, they have a big stare down. They decide to team up and eliminate Anderson and Gallows. They keep working together against Drew and Dolph. And this is where the match kind of picks up again, I guess. 26 is Roman Reigns to big boos. And then I thought they gave it away when Cole said that 26 was the only late slot to never produce a winner. But, you know, apparently they didn't. So that was a good little fake out. Yeah. He immediately spears Dolph and tosses him to even more boos. I'm like, how like not over do you have to be to get booed for losing Dolph Ziggler in 2020? It's like pretty bad. 27 is Kevin Owens, and then he does all these cannonballs in the corner. I thought it was funny that he like kind of shrugged when he looked at Edge in the corner and was like, well, I know you had neck surgery, buddy, but I'm sorry. And then give him the cannonball. He gave Roman the stunner, and then did the cool little sequence and gave another stunner to Orton. So this stuff is all fun. 28 was Aleister Black, who cleaned house. 29 was Samoa Joe, and he and Black like stood there and traded. And here's where it got stupid again. Because number 30 was Seth Rollins, flanked by the Authors of Pain and Buddy Murphy, his little stable. Now, there's like 50 referees on the floor. Why do none of them have the power to send non-competitors to the back when they're interfering? These are not even like Rumble competitors that were ever legal in the match and just tossed out. No. These were – I didn't well, – Isn't there like a year of the Rumble where fucking Taka Michinoku and Funaki are not in the Rumble and they keep running out and trying to eliminate people and the refs keep chasing them all over the ring and like, you know, keep like, you're not in the match. You got to get out of here. Here, I mean, that happens, I think, right? Do you remember that too? I think it was like 2000 or something.
John, I wasn't alive.
Okay, but you might, I'm sorry. I thought you went back and saw some Rumbles or something.
Absolutely not.
Okay, well, anyway. So I'm pretty sure that did happen. I could be making that up. So
someone ask Rich. He probably will know.
Yes, I know. He's watched like a million Rumbles. But yeah, so in that year, they're all chasing around like, oh, Kai and Tai, you can't be out here. You'll do too much damage as non-competitors. Here, Seth Rollins has two giant men in fucking like combat gear and another wrestler helping him. And the referees are like, eh, we can't do anything about it. I mean, they're just fucking, they pull out Joe, they help Seth eliminate Joe and Kevin Owens. And like, the fucking refs don't give a shit. The only reason why the crew leaves is because Joe and Owens like brawl with them to the back. So if Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens had just said, ah, fuck this, apparently the ref would have stayed out there and just let them keep fucking interfering. It's just like, what the fuck? So anyway, Seth gives Roman a curb stomp. I have no idea why he doesn't like him now. I guess just because he's a heel. But they had no falling out to my knowledge. Because like, you know, they're on different brands. I mean, you know. And then Seth uses, oh, I said that, he uses stable to distract them. And then Seth wants to team up with Roman again. So again, why?
That was pretty funny.
Why does Seth give him a curb stomp and then say like, "Oh, actually, let's team up, buddy"? I guess it's because the other guy's got.
He's like, me and you. Let's. And Roman just looks at him like, "Fuck off." Which is what everyone was thinking.
Now I actually realize this did make sense. Now I'm being mean to WWE unfairly, which I never do on this podcast. But Seth, the only reason why Seth wanted to team up with Roman now is because all of his buddies got like brawl to the back with Joe and Owens. That's why Seth suddenly was like wanting to be like, yeah, buddy, the Shield for life. But yeah, all four of the Roman, Edge, and Orton and Drew all ganged up on Seth and eliminated him. That was kind of funny. So the final four came down to Edge, Orton, Roman, and Drew, all baby faces. It's hard to know for sure in this company, but I think they all are baby faces. And this was a pretty fun final four.
Yeah.
Edge and Orton gave Drew a double RKO. Orton like set up behind him and like kind of shrugged when Edge turned around, but he acted like he was going to RKO him. But you know, Edge then basically talked Orton and not turning on him, only turn on him and toss him out, which is like, again, the stupid WWE thing of like, why don't you just team up till the end instead of tossing your teammate out first? Reigns goes to spear Edge, but Edge like leapfrogs him, which gets like a gigantic pop. That was really cool. And then he like, you know, spears him and like tosses him, and the crowd went crazy, but Roman just barely held on. And then Edge gets like, you know, knocked to the apron as well. And Roman like just like keeps kicking and punching at his hands until he falls to the floor. So that was really cool. The crowd booed the hell out of that though. And it came down to Roman and Drew, and Roman gave him the Superman punch and went to toss him out. But instead Drew hit the Claymore kick and tossed him. But yeah, so, you know,
so unless I missed it. Oops. I think Roman didn't cock the fist for his last Superman punch, which might be why he got eliminated.
Because he didn't cock the fist. I thought this was a good Rumble. Not as good as the women's one this year. I thought the women's one was better. But this was like a 3.5-star Rumble. You know, the Brock stuff was really fun. It had a very long dead period after that. But the final four, at least, was good. Even if the stuff with Seth and the stable made no sense and was like mildly infuriating. So,
yep, I'm pretty much with you there. I was around that same, like, I don't know. I don't really star rate Rumbles as accurately as I would everything else, but it's around that 3.25-3.5 range. A little less than the Women's Rumble, but I enjoyed myself. It was an enjoyable enough time. And the Brock stuff was really, really good. So I just, I kind of wish they would have done it for the entire match because that would have been pretty funny.
Yeah. I thought they were for a second, but yeah, there's the Royal Rumble. Two good Rumble matches. The rest of the card kind of shit, other than a pretty good Asuka and Becky match. But like, look, on the modern WWE scale, it was a pretty good show compared to some of the other shit they did last year.
Yeah, I pretty much agree.
So the next thing we're going to talk about is the DDT January 26th Korakuen Sweet Dreams that also happened today. Overall, this show did 1,278 fans, which is better than a lot of their rank and file Korakuens do. You know, they draw a lot of like 900 to 1,000 Korakuens. So I don't know if it was the Masao Tanaka being a draw or the Anytime Anywhere contracts, which people usually get really excited about. But, you know, it was a pretty good card, so maybe that's just why. The show opened with Chihiro Hashimoto and Yuki Ino opening the show together, and you know they basically promised to win the tag titles on their own. Like they each were like, "I'm going to win the tag titles all by myself," and then Imabayashi like scolded them and said, they should get along better since people say they look alike, which is really funny. Like, they both looked at each other and they both looked at the, you know, Bayashi, and they look kind of annoyed by that. The opening match was Damnation, Mad Polly, Nobuhiro Shibatani, and Soma Takao, again, defeating Keigo Nakamura, Masahiro Takanashi, and Mizuki Watase. It was good to see Shibatani back after he went freelance, but there wasn't a lot to this match. Soma pinned Nakamura. Very quick, not much to it. 2 stars.
Yep. I don't like the way Keigo Nakamura looks. That's my only hot take on this. Whenever I look at him, I think he looks like shit.
I mean, he's still a very new trainer.
I know. I think he's just very weird looking.
Yeah. Match 2 was the L'Oreal match. Super Sasu Dango Machine and Toru Awashi versus Hiroshi Yamato and Mao. So Pro, again, DET English Pro, which you always have to plug because they do so much help on this. So actually, let me give you the exact thing to plug. It is DET Pro underscore ENG. But yeah, the basically what he said was the beautician will be ringside to fix the wrestler's hairdos. Shall they get messed up in the rest of the action? The beautician's favorite promotion is WWE and his favorite wrestler is The Rock, which I thought was funny. Mao had new theme music, so that was cool. But yeah, Sasadango and Awashi, everybody loved their hairdos, especially Awashi. Like the people in the front row went, the girls were like all going nuts for Awashi.
They were like, yeah, they're legitimately like corpsing in the front row.
Yeah,
for Awashi's hair.
His hair did look great, okay? It did look really good. Like, it looked like partied and like all styled. It looked like I promised Puff and Brain Andrew on Twitter that like I would talk about Awashi's hair. Awashi's hair looked so fucking good. Like, this was the best in his 20-plus year career, in 20-plus years of wrestling, that his hair has ever looked. So, five-star hairdo for Toru Awashi.
Good hair.
The announcers just kept saying Kakui over and over again, just like cool or handsome. So they were very into these hairdos. So Sasango, the first joke was like he was very busy finalizing plans for the next muscle show on Monday, since he scripts it all and plans it all himself. So he's like got this big paper out and he's like writing all this shit down right in the middle of the match. He tags in and like immediately starts making a call for equipment for the show in the middle of the match, like in the middle of a lockup at a headlock spot. And he runs the ropes in like super slow motion and keeps ducking Yamato's like clotheslines and stuff. But then finally just gets tripped by a simple drop down because he's going so slow. So that was really funny. Then Sasango lost his mask and his hair to try not to be a wig. So he goes for an emergency ringside beautician session. And it's here where I learned that lucha tags have been in effect all this time in this match. So Awashi comes in, but the other two start, like, they each grab his arms and they start messing up his hair. And this gets huge boos because the crowd's like, no, we love his hair. How dare you? Again, very funny. The beautician comes in to save by fixing hair that they're messing up. So what a save. But Sasango's mad because he's supposed to be fixing his hair. He brings his chair to the ring. And Awashi says, I'll take care of Sasango's hair. And he tells the beautician to go fight them. And here I finally notice the beautician's been wearing a fucking Balor Club shirt all this time.
Wait, really?
Did you ever? Yes, he's wearing a fucking Finn Balor shirt.
Oh, did that sucks. I didn't notice that at all. Okay.
They were serious, I guess.
I guess.
But yeah, they like start chopping and slapping him. It's pretty funny. Mao and Yamato. But then the beautician finally tags out to Awashi, and then Awashi like lays him out again, and the beautician does a people's elbow. but then Mao finally just like delivers the 450 Sasadango over the win, and Awashi couldn't make the save because he was busy having his hair fixed on the outside. So this was tremendous stuff.
I liked it a lot. I thought it got a little long in the tooth at the end, but I thought for the most part I thought this was pretty hilarious, and it's probably the most I've enjoyed Sasadango for a while, I'd say.
Yeah. Match 3 was All Out, Akito, Kanosuke Takeshita, and Shuma Katsumata against the new unit that was formed on the first Korakuen of the year, which turned out we got their name for the first time. It's called Eruption, which is based off of like a Shibuya like street gangs.
Okay.
Shibuya street gangs in the 90s were named after were named Eruption. So I guess that's what they're named. And all that stuff, like in the back streets and stuff in the video, and then when they go to that shrine, that's all Shibuya. So it all makes sense. But yeah, so it's called Eruption, and it's Kasusada Higuchi, Saki Akai, and Yukio Sakaguchi. There's like a cool video that I just mentioned that shows them all walking around the Shibuya back streets and driving around and going to a shrine to pray. They have some kind of like Japanese hip-hop song and like matching white and red outfits that look really cool. And Higuchi is like clearly positioned as the leader, so I think this is finally like his big push. So people have been waiting forever for the big Higuchi push. You're finally getting it, it looks like.
I hope so, yeah. That dude rules.
But yeah, this match was good, and this is one of the matches where I'm just like, how the fuck does Saki Akai take some of these bumps? Because, like, she is in there. Like, sometimes you can tell the guys are going very gentle with her. Other times, like, she at one point in this match takes, like, a fucking backbreaker from Konosuke Takeshita that looks like it may shoot break her in half. And, like, yeah, it's not just about... Like, she's doing all these mixed gender matches. It's not just about her gender, because, like, you know, Chihiro Hashimoto is doing mixed gender matches too, but like that woman's built like a tank, so you never worry about her. But Saki Akai is like, she looks like she could fucking, I don't know, fit between a crack in a wall. I mean, she is like just perfectly thin, and I'm just like how does this woman, she's like the rawest wrestler on earth, to take half these fucking bumps and just get in there with dudes and like fucking mix it up with them, despite looking like she weighs like about 60 pounds. So
being like 5 foot, like 6 foot tall.
Yeah, she's like 5'9", I think. Yeah. She is crazy. I don't know how she does have this shit, but she's one of my favorite wrestlers. She used to be terrible, but now she's actually pretty good now, and she just like has this like, I don't know, she has like a very unique style that's really could only be her. Like no one else on the entire earth could ever wrestle like Saki Akai. So it's wonderful that Saki Akai wrestles like Saki Akai. I mean, I actively seek out her stuff, like on DVD house shows and stuff, because I want to see this alien woman like fucking get in there and kick people. She took some crazy bumps in here. You know, they did a bunch of really cool double team stuff with Saki. And then Saki and Yukio hit like these double apron soccer ball kicks, and Higuchi hit the Dr. Bomb and Akito back in the ring, and that was the pin. It was really fun. It was like a little all over the place, maybe, but I enjoyed myself. 3.25.
Yeah, I also enjoyed it. I think I went 3.5, but yeah, it was a pretty enjoyable time. But I really like this idea of the Eruption unit. I like all three of those people a lot. I've been growing on Saki lately. I used to kind of not really think much of her, but Higuchi has always been one of my favorites in DDT, and I always like Yukio. I like the way he looks. And I thought the video was really cool. And I was trying to get around to the January 3rd Korakuen before watching the show, but I didn't really have the time. But so I didn't really know the backstory of this. So when I saw that video, I was like, oh, this is cool. So yeah, I'm excited to see where that leads. And hopefully it leads to Higuchi, you know, getting hot pushed more, because that dude fucking rules.
Yeah. The other thing, like, yeah, it's just three wrestlers I really like, and they're all in a unit together now. So that's really cool. So I hope the unit has a big year. After that, we have the Right to Challenge Anytime Anywhere Time Difference Battle Royal Ladder Match. Yasuo Urano, Makoto Oishi, Antonio Honda, Dan Shokudino, Daisuke Sasaki, Tetsuya Endo, Shinya Aoki, and Yukio Naya. So here's the rules of this match. It is a delayed entry battle royal, so just like a Royal Rumble, which we've obviously talked about many of them today. There's three envelopes above the ring. They each contain an Anytime Anywhere contract. The ladder will be introduced after the fourth entrant. If you get eliminated, if you get pinned, you get eliminated. But you can also just pull down a contract and win. So, you know, I mean, at that point you leave as well. So you can't pull down multiple contracts. And there's nothing for the last man remaining if it comes down to, like, you know, I don't know, pinfalls or whatever. Also, they announced there's going to be three more contracts to be determined in three more matches next week. So there you go. That's even more contracts coming. But yeah, Endo came out first, and then Makoto. Yukio Naya came in next. And I don't know if the story was that Oishi had him paid him off or something, but like Naya kept trying to help, but like did very badly, as we'll get to later. But yeah, he double teamed Endo with Oishi here. Four of them was Antonio Honda. He didn't trip over the bottom rope, but he tripped over the ladder he was trying to bring into the ring. So I thought that was really funny. A little twist on the usual Gon the Fox thing. The fifth was Yasuo Arano. The sixth was Daisuke Sasaki. The seventh was Shinya Aoki, and he and Honda had like a little Goin nipple standoff, which is really funny. Mm-hmm. The eighth was Danshu Kodino, who looked like he was going to rush right in, but still stopped to kiss two men in the front row, which again made me laugh a lot harder than it should have. Somewhere in here, Yasuo Arano got an envelope. Did you see how? Because I completely missed it.
I caught it, but I don't remember like where the match happened. It happened all of a sudden where it's like, oh, okay, this dude got one. Okay.
So it just happened. It just happened out of nowhere, right? Like they didn't really build it or anything.
Yeah, it kind of just happened. Like, they were doing their like they're climbing up the ladder, and then stuff would happen, and then Arano just got one out of nowhere.
And this is where like Yuki Naya tries to help Oishi by like choke slamming him up so he could grab one of the contracts, but instead. Oishi doesn't grab it and gets chokeslammed on the ladder instead, which is pretty funny. But yeah, that was a really like a little inventive spot. And then Sasaki and Endo like climb another ladder, but they get distracted fighting about who will go for the easy to reach contract and who will go for the hard one. And Sasaki finally gets the easy contract after Dino goes after Endo. And then we get like one of the most amazing spots of all time. So Dino's climbing a ladder. There's another ladder. It's a ladder bridge from the rope to the other to the ladder. And Shinya Aoki ends up laying on that ladder. And we get the Danshoku nightmare where Dino like leaning over him on the ladder. And which is like one of the most inventive ladder spots I've seen in years. And then Dino gives Endo the Danshoku driver on the horizontal ladder, which was a sick as hell bump. That's a pile driver bump on a fucking ladder.
Yeah, that looked it like ladder. Yeah, and his head was in his pants too. So that I mean, it looked fucking like wicked. I was kind of like, by the time this hand that happened, I was kind of like, all right, a little too much humping for my tastes. I get it. You know, we did the humping, and then fucking they pulled that on. I'm like, holy shit. Okay, I was not expecting that. So that was cool.
Yeah. But Shinya Aoki finally gets a third contract after like tying Makoto up in the octopus hole on top of the ladder and then reaching while he has him in the hold. So that was great. So yeah, this was like legitimately more enjoyable than the vast majority of totally played out ladder matches, most of them in World Wrestling Entertainment these days.
Yeah.
So I usually can't stand ladder matches anymore, but I thought this was like a lot of inventive stuff, a lot of really fun stuff. I went 3 3/4. I thought it was great.
I was kind of lower. I was kind of like 3 1/4, mainly because the Dino stuff got to be a little. I don't really like Dino that much. Like, I don't viscerally hate him like some people do. Like, I can take him in small doses, but it got to be a little much at some point. But I thought there's a lot of cool stuff in this match. Like, and the Danshoku driver on the ladder was fucking disgusting. So
yeah, that was
awesome. I enjoyed myself. Like, pretty much the story of the show that we'll talk about once we talk about the show as a whole. But yeah, it was, for me, it was fine/good, but I didn't really hate myself for watching, so it's good.
Ima Bayashi then took the microphone and revealed that one of these contracts is special. It's the sword for our right to challenge in the main event of Saitama. Turned out Yasuo Arano had the special one, but of course he has to defend it every single match from here on out, just like any other Anytime Anywhere contract. And he complained he had like two more matches today because I think he was booked on Basara. But then Imabayashi reveals you could use your regular Anytime Anywhere contract to challenge for the KOD title or the Saitama sword. Sasaki cashes in now on Arano for the sword, so we get the impromptu match. And I have to say, that's fucking stupid. When you really think about it, why would you ever challenge? If you could do either one, right? You have the contract. You can either challenge for the KOD. You can either challenge for the KOD title, which does not have to be defended in every match from now until Saitama Super Arena automatically, or you can challenge for this fucking sword that you lose automatically if you get pinned at any time between now and June, because the Saitama match is until June. That's kind of stupid. Yeah. Why would you ever challenge?
I didn't really think about it like that until now, but now that you mentioned it, yeah. Also, I hope no one shows Will Ospreay the sword, because he's going to want that.
Unless I'm missing something, maybe I am. Maybe somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's how it works. And I don't really get why you'd ever challenge for that sword. But anyway,
I mean, it's a cool sword. I mean,
it is a cool sword, but you got to defend it every match you're in. Like, you can get pinned in an 8-man tag and lose it. Like, that's kind of stupid. Anyway, you know, obviously you just don't get pinned. If you get pinned in the eight-man tag and you're KOD champion, you're still KOD champion. It's just, anyway. Yes, Hirano was Daisuke Sasaki. Sasaki basically attacks him right away, but Hirano, you know, fights back, and then, you know, they go to a crossface. The crowd was really into this, so that helped. Like, the crowd was going crazy. But Hirano counters, like, a flash pin and then keeps, like, almost pinning with these backslides. But Sasaki counters Hirano, holds Hirano into a jackknife cradle for the pin. He takes the sword from poor Hirano, who barely got to even hold it in his hands before he lost it. But, yeah. Sasaki backstage today is going to take the sword and the belt and go to NXT because he wants to see Candice LeRae. So, there you go.
Yeah, hopefully he doesn't lose it. I mean, didn't he say he was going to lose it or something in America?
Yeah, he said he might lose it in America.
So. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty funny. Yeah. I wonder, it probably was planned, but I wonder if they kind of were like, just grab whatever thing and then have Sasaki cash it or whatever, but...
Yeah.
I don't know, because I can't exactly... When I first saw that Rano had the sword, I'm like, oh, okay, so he's going to main event Saitama. Because I was stupid, and I'm like, oh, no. And then he lost right away, so that was pretty funny.
Match number 6, now Michi Marufuji against Kazuki Hirata. The whole thing here is, like, you know, Marufuji can't remember Hirata's name. They play Hirata's music, and he doesn't come out. And the Marufuji comes out carrying an unconscious Hirata in a chair. Apparently Hirata tried to attack him backstage, and Marufuji said he's dead now. But Hirata does eventually wake up and, you know, apologize for the attack and says he wants a good, clean fight. And they shake hands, and the bell rings. He immediately goes up to Marufuji with a chair. So that was funny. But other than that, it's just a pretty one-sided match for Marufuji, including, like, interrupting the dance and breaking his trademark glasses, which the crowd boos. But, you know, then we get to, like, Hirata reading this, like, heartfelt letter to Marufuji about how much he admires him and to please dance with him. He has two more pairs of glasses, and, you know, they eventually do dance together after Marufuji refuses at first. But, of course, Hirata turns on him again and, you know, hits an enziguri and tries to cradle him, but Marufuji eventually beats him. But, like, he puts the glasses back on and hits, like, a dancing knee, which was kind of funny. But I don't know. I was kind of hoping this would be more, like, serious Hirata. You know, yes. Like, serious Hirata can be really good. Like, he's had some amazing matches over the years. But, like, yeah, this was just, like, total comedy and, you know, not what I wanted from this match. And, you know, Marufuji and DDT, I've yet to see any proof that's good. He very rarely.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is better than the Endo match from Sumo Hall. But,
yeah.
Was it Sumo Hall?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I was kind of going to say the same thing. But I've seen, obviously, less of the Harada than you. But whenever I've seen him in, like, serious stuff, he's always been pretty good. So, like, when I saw this match in paper, I'm like, oh, okay, it'll be a fun underdog thing. And I realized there's going to be some comedy in it because that's just the house style, but they got a little too much of the comedy to the point where I was kind of like, oh, man, I was kind of just hoping this would be like Marufuji was going to kick the shit out of this dude. He was going to fight back, and then hopefully they would, like, do that. But, like, they kind of just chose to go comedy route, which was, I mean, it was funny, but it was definitely not what I was looking for. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I went 3.25 on it, but... Yeah, I was probably the most disappointed by this over anything because I thought it could have been so much more, but it was just kind of just a normal comedy match.
But he did finally acknowledge Hirata by name after the match. He left arm in arm, so you got a happy ending at least. The semifinal, the KOD tag team titles, I never know how to pronounce this. Natalius? I don't know.
I thought it was Nautilus. I don't know.
Nautilus, thank you. Naomi Yoshimura and Yuki Ueno against Chihiro Hashimoto and Yuki Ino. So Chihiro and Yuki have, like, a kind of funny mashup theme, which they both got mad at when they came out. They were, like, yelling at the music guys. So I guess it's an unauthorized mashup theme. Yeah, the match had a really hot start with a big corkscrew dive from Ueno to the floor. It was, like, very fast-paced action. There was, like, this enormous lariat by Chihiro on Ueno, and he paid her back later, another one in the great exchange. And, you know, there was just, like, so much cool stuff in this match. Yoshimura at one point does, like, this crazy, like, headlock takeover counter of a spear, and then this enormous pile driver for two. And that's where I really wrote that this match fucking rules. And then he puts away, I think, Ino. Are you pinned Ino, I think?
I can't remember. I watched this at, like, 4 in the morning. So.
Okay. But yeah, I wrote Yoshimura pinned Ueno, which obviously isn't true. But yeah, but I gave it 4 stars. I thought it was really awesome. You know, not quite like, yeah, he did pin Ueno. There you go. It only went 11 and a half minutes, so it wasn't like a epic match or whatever, but it was a really, really good one while it lasted. So I enjoyed this quite a bit. My clear match of the night.
Yeah, I went 3 3/4 on it. The beginning half of it, I kind of wasn't really getting into, but the second half is when I started really getting into it, and I enjoyed just the general Haas nature of it. And I really like Yoshimura and Ueno as a team, and I hope they have a good reign, because I enjoy their matches from what I've seen so far. So I hope to keep it up.
Sorry, it's almost 1 a.m. here. But
believe me, I'm feeling it too.
The main event, the KOD Openweight title, Hiroshima and Masato Tanaka. So the first big spot here was a pretty crazy, like, sliding forearm lariat thing by Tanaka off the apron to the floor, which is really cool. The problem I have with this match is, like, Tanaka hits him with a chair shot to the leg on the floor, and, you know, with his leg on the post, and you think that it's going to be, like, a leg match. But after that, Hiroshima, like, he hits John Woo, and then he starts throwing kicks fine afterwards. So it's like, what the fuck was the point of that if you guys are just going to blow it off immediately? It was very weird.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. That was weird.
But yeah, Tanaka, like, you know, the match goes, you know, it goes over 20 minutes. So, you know, I'm obviously rushing a little bit here since I'm very tired. But at the very end of the match, he hits like a big series of sliding Ds and puts Hiroshima away for the pin to become the new champion. You know, I thought it was a very good match, just close to bordering on 4 stars, but maybe just a leg thing annoyed me enough that I went to down to 3 3/4. But yeah, I mean, you know, just not quite like an all-time classic or anything, but I was very stunned by Tanaka winning. I mean, I was not spoiled. And Hiroshima failing in second defense and Tanaka becoming the 74th champion, that was pretty surprising. I guess we'll see where we go from here, especially with all the anytime, any contracts, you know, dancing around. Yeah.
I was really surprised that, because, like, I kind of went through this match, like, I was enjoying it. I mean, I ended up going 4 stars, so I was a little bit above you. But, like, I was enjoying it, but I never really believed that Tanaka would actually win. So I was kind of just like, eh, whatever. Because it's whenever I don't believe in the challenger. I mean, I'm not really invested. So, and then Tanaka won, and I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, I like without Tanaka. I'm interested to see how it goes, but I don't know. Obviously, I'm not a hardcore DDT fan or anything. I mean, I watch it very casually, but, like, I don't know if I would have put the title on Tanaka, but, I mean, it's not like he's a bad wrestler or anything, so we'll see how it goes. And I think they're setting up something with Mao, so that should be entertaining if it happens.
Yeah, so anybody actually brought him out as the Tanaka's first challenger for the February Korakuen, so that's going to be the first KOD title challenge for Masato Tanaka. But yeah, overall, I thought this was a, you know, a good show. Not like a... not a bad one, not one of the all-time... It's not a Korakuen I'm going to remember as an all-time great DDT Korakuen, but, you know, there was some really funny comedy with the L'Oreal match, and there was some ladder stuff was really, really fun, and I probably remember that more than anything, the ladder battle royal. And then a really good tag title match and a pretty damn good main event that just wasn't quite 4-star level. So, you know, good show. I definitely didn't regret watching it or anything.
No, it was an easy watch. It was like 2.5 hours, maybe, or if that even. Yeah, and it went by pretty quickly. Nothing really felt like it went longer than it needed to, so that's always a good thing.
Yeah,
it was like a solid 7 out of 10 show for me. Honestly.
Yeah, 7 out of 10 is a pretty good number. That makes sense. Maybe even 7.5, somewhere around.
Yeah,
there.
Sure. That's what it's at in Cage Match right now with 4 ratings. Is a 7.5.
Oh wow, okay. The Royal Rumble, let's say 6.5.
Mm. Yeah, sure. Somewhere around there, like a 6 or something, feels about right.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't normally score shows like that, but that's a good. It's a good.
I don't either. It just felt right when you're describing that DDT show. Like, it felt like a solid 7 for me.
But I didn't want anyone listening at home to be like, "Well, what score do you give the Rumble, then, you jerks?" So there you go. So I didn't take any questions, exactly because I knew that we were recording this at 11:30 p.m. on a Sunday night, so that way we'd keep the show length down. But there you go. Good. No questions this week. So, Jack, why don't you give me some plugs so we can go to bed?
Oh, thank God. Twitter, at Packerman120. I've been watching more wrestling this year, so maybe I'll write something for Voices of Wrestling in the near future. I believe I have my Match of the Year 2020 spreadsheet in the thing. So that's cool. I'm planning on going to Tampa for WrestleMania weekend and then Japan later in the year with you. So I'll probably be tweeting about those things. So if you want to see those adventures come April and October. Follow me there at Packerman120.
I am not going to Tampa, but I am going to Japan. So you will also be able to follow my adventures if you want. So thank you as always for listening, folks. You can follow us on Twitter at WrestleOmakase, Wrestling Would Not Fit. You can come wish me luck when I'm going to Foxwoods this week for my girlfriend's birthday. So please put your hands together and lend me your energy for when I play craps. Like I'm Goku, trying to get the Kamehameha going. You're just gonna give me your energy to do the spirit bomb on the craps table. anyway, so hopefully I win some money this week. So that's this week, little mini vacation, but I will be back in time to do next week's episode of Wrestling Omakase, so don't worry about that. Next week, I haven't really planned next week yet, though, I'm assuming we're going to talk about, for sure, the two New Beginning and Sapporo shows. Maybe we'll talk about something else, too.
World's Quiet? Schedule.
No, not that. The show didn't exist. I mean, you can't have a brand fight a brand that doesn't exist. It's just not
true. Thing.
It's a rumor that show existed, a false rumor perpetrated by some people at Voices of Wrestling, which I cannot support. So,
yeah, they say it's good.
How could something that doesn't exist be good, Jack? It doesn't make sense.
If you're not, it's too late to get into this deep mind.
They're having some kind of mass hallucination, and I'm happy for them. They're enjoying that, but they should stop with the drugs and live drug free. Drug free is the way to be. So Wrestling Omakase next week. We'll at least talk about New Beginning in Sapporo. Maybe something else if I can remember what else is happening next week. I don't have a guest yet, even, but we'll figure all that out this week after next week, New Beginning in Sapporo. Until then, we'll see you next time. Thank you as always for listening.